Hello, and welcome to the Sound Up Seattle podcast, your one-stop shop for all things Seattle and Washington sports. I'm your host, Tyler Cartwright, joined, as always, by my co-host,
John Carey.
And we are here today with two different things to talk about this week. Instead of just the Mariners, we've got a couple things going on. The Storm, the WNBA draft happened Monday, April 14th, and so they had four draft picks, and we're going to talk about those, kind of talk about their potential impacts on the Storm this season. And then, of course, we have to talk Mariners sweeping the Rangers, and they're currently battling the Reds in their second game of the series right now as we record this. So we'll have some live updates, live takes for you guys there as well. John, anything to say before we just dive in?
Yeah, we're so busy this week, we don't even have time to preview the NBA playoffs as the playing games wrap up. This is even better for us, though, because it means when we talk next week, there'll probably be like one game played in each series, which will make all our hot takes, you know, so much more accurate and precise.
Hot takes out the wazoo. Steph Curry, washed. LeBron, washed.
Yeah, exciting. All but that it's going to be good to talk about these two things.
All right, here is some Coyote Picnic. All right, John, let's start off with a hot topic, at least for the YouTube commenters and everybody on YouTube. By the way, check us out. If you've made it this far in the pod, check us out on YouTube as well. We always say that at the end, but I'm going to say it at the beginning because nobody listens that far usually in the podcast.
People get halfway in and quit on us.
People are like, they're done with Mariners takes. We got to talk about Gonzaga now. We don't have to listen to that.
That's bullshit. It's the other way around.
So yeah, check us out on YouTube, Sound Up Seattle. It's easy to find us. You'll see all of our videos and stuff like that. It's all the same titles that you see on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Let's talk Mariners. Let's talk sweep of the Rangers. Last time we talked, the Mariners went 2-4, I believe. They had taken two games from the Astros and gotten swept by the Giants. Since then, they had the series against the Rangers that they swept at T-Mobile Park, and they are currently playing the Reds. They're up 2-0 as we speak, and it is the middle of the third inning. So, Mainly going to talk about the Rangers series and kind of the outcomes of that and what that means for the AL West. But what were your thoughts?
I love that you skipped over that we lost game one of that Red series. We swept the Rangers and we are currently playing the Reds. That was an accurate description of the week. But yeah, 3-1 in the last four games. Hopefully they can win out today. But yeah, rejoice. Sing from the mountaintops, ye Mariners fans. Screw the Reds game. I could not have asked for a better week. This is a team that is climbed up. They're now 8-9. I believe they'll be 9-9 after the Reds game today. So they did a great job of, you know, kind of closing just the, you know, win-loss gap. And they did it by taking 2 of 3 against the Astros, our greatest foes in the division, and then sweeping the Rangers, who are our biggest competition in terms of top of the division. Huge for the Mariners in the short term and in the long term in terms of standings. Really encouraging just for what we know is going to be a long and competitive division race to get the first three. And it was a beautiful showing. I think the thing that stood out to me, we will talk, I think, maybe even a little bit more than we should about the offensive stars of this last week. But it was the starters that did it for us. Our three starting pitchers in those three Rangers games all made it at least 5 innings and all gave up exactly 1 earned run in their outings. So it was just excellent starting pitching and solid to good offense that won the day for us.
Yeah, for me, the thing that really stuck out was the fact that this is a team that we're going to compete against a ton. Like we've said, the in division games are going to matter a lot, and so if we can beat this Rangers team, you know, at least 12 times over the 18 games that we're going to play this season, that's going to be a really, really big bonus when it comes to the AL West standings. Right now, we're 2 games back from them. They're 10-7, and 3 of those 7 losses came at the hands of the Mariners, which is awesome to see. And being 2 games back after starting 4-8 at one point feels a lot better. Feels a lot better than we did. So Mariners fans, like we said last week, you know, we love you guys. We're all Mariners fans here, but let's tone it down. The overreactions are real after 2 weeks in the season. Things will round into form. The Angels are not going to be second in the AL West. I don't think. I mean, there are some players on that team that are performing quite well that are newsworthy, that are new to the season, but I don't think the Angels will be the second best team in the AL West moving forward. The thing that I want to talk about, and the thing that I touched on last week that I really wanted to see from this Mariners team, was I wanted them to stomp an opponent. I wanted them to just like win a game. I think I said 8-1, and they won a game 9-2 against the Rangers, which is just like, that's what you want to see. It makes the Rangers bullpen have to like use their long reliever. It makes them struggle that much more in the future and just puts a lot more pressure on them going forward throughout the week. You know, they basically the next two games, they kind of have to use a different assortment of pitchers than they normally would when you get out a pitcher, you know, in the third, fourth, fifth inning. The earlier you can get out a starter, the more you can make them use their bullpen, the better it works for the series, and especially in a team that's in your division, makes them work the next series if they're two games away. It makes them work that much harder. So I really like to see that, especially against the Rangers team that we all are kind of despising right now in terms of the everybody's high hopes for them this season. I want to touch on real quick something that we talked about last week that we weren't unsure of, but Ryan Bliss had that torn bicep. We were a little upset about that. He is confirmed to be out for 4 or 5 months. He's going to get surgery on that left bicep. So it sucks. But it is giving another guy the opportunity to come up in Ben Williamson. His first game with the Mariners was yesterday at the time of recording against the Reds. And first plate appearance, got a hit, and he's gotten a hit already today, I believe. So he's just grinding along, doing good things for this team so far. And really, he's a proven defensive guy. And so that's going to be nice to have, especially when you've had 37-year-old Donovan Solano really not performing. It's nice to call up Ben Williamson and have him start off hot.
Yeah, sorry to see Bliss go. This is bad of me to do this live on a pod, but any word on Victor Robles? Have we heard yet the extent of that injury? Are they holding out on us?
I haven't. Let me look it up. You can ramble for a second.
Okay. Yeah, there have been enough signs of life with this offense that honestly I'm pretty encouraged about their season outlook. I know I've been giving management a really hard time, and I do think they deserve it, but I've been really impressed with a lot of our role players. But I do think it would make a world of difference to know that we could count on Robles come, you know, post All-Star, you know, the stretch run down the season and then hopefully the playoff. I think it would make a big difference in terms of depth. I think we'll talk about in Floating and Floundering a couple of guys that have stepped in for him that are really just playing awesome, but you know, we think they would play even better with maybe lowered roles.
Yeah, Robles, nothing has changed since last week when we saw the 12 weeks of recovery. So still thinking somewhere around late July, early August, kind of around the trade deadline, home stretch time, which is that sucks. Like, it sucks that Robles is going to be out for that long, but we hope he comes back stronger. Fractured shoulder after the dislocation is just tough for baseball players specifically. Like, some guys might be able to power through, you know, if they're playing in a weak sport like hockey or something like that, but not in baseball. That dislocated shoulder really takes you out.
Definitely.
But other than that, I think it's been relatively good news, like we said. And we'll get into Floaters and Flounders. Currently, this Red Series, I just want to touch on it yesterday. Luis Castillo returned to Cincinnati, gets the opportunity to go against his former team, and looks really good through almost five. And then he gets into a little bit of a jam. And I think I'm going to put that one on the manager. I think if he's up to 90 pitches and he's got two men on in the, I think it was the bottom of the fifth, maybe bottom of the sixth, and you're in a spot where a guy is laboring and you're up one and they have the opportunity to if this guy hits a home run, which he does, they go up 6-4. But it's just like, I'm going to put that on Dan Wilson. That's not on Luis Castillo. He's at that pitch count. It's more on Dan Wilson in my mind. And it's something that, you know, Wilson's going to have to figure out. He doesn't want to use this bullpen too much because it's a little fragile when it comes to, you know, Gregory Santos not performing as well as expected. Matt Brash still hasn't been able to return. All these things where the bullpen is having to do more work than we thought they would in terms of the middle relievers. But, you know, if you want to win that game, you got to sacrifice a couple pitches of Luis and move on from him there. So just wanted to call that out while I can complain.
Yeah, and that's tough for me because so far this season, it's been five innings. It's been five innings for our starters. Wu went seven against the Rangers, but he just looked so good, and he was doing such a good job of limiting his pitch count that, I thought it was very reasonable to let him go seven. But it's been five, both Bryce, who had a nice outing against the Rangers, and Logan both went five. It's just been five all year for these guys. And that, you know, frustrates me sometimes. I know we have a really good bullpen, but I'm like, come on, we can't let these guys go six innings. But yeah, that Luis game was a classic example of, you know, this is why we do five innings, because he got raked over the coals in that sixth. So maybe that means I need to change my mindset about how I evaluate the way we've been scheduling these innings. But yeah, tough one for him, honestly. I guess we can talk about this now as we kind of move into floating and floundering. But yeah, great starter play this week. Luis definitely tripped up in terms of our guys this week. And, you know, he kind of spoiled what was going to go down in history as the game of one of your very favorite guys, the Dylan Moore game. You want to talk a little bit about that in the week that he's had?
Yeah, I guess we can move from that into some floaters and flounders, because Dylan Moore, obviously one of our floaters, has to be. Guy has two home runs, all four RBIs in that first Reds game. And he's on a really good pace for this season so far. He's batting over 300 right now, slugging over 600 right now. His OPS is above 1,000. Like, Dylan Moore is looking very, very nice in that replacement role where he's kind of taking over second base, third base as needed. But that's Nick Lodolo as a pitcher is just a guy that Dylan Moore is built to crush. Just a looping lefty that Dylan Moore, you know, in that leadoff spot, everybody knows that he is ready to bash any pitcher that does that to him. You know, like a Reed Detmers, anybody with a big curveball, big looping pitches, Dylan Moore crushes. And so I've been really enjoying what he's done so far, especially against those lefties. I need to look at his splits actually. That's going to be interesting, but I think as a guy, you know, he's kind of in the middle, right? As of right now versus lefties, he's hitting versus lefties, he's hitting 421 versus righties, he's hitting 176. I was looking at his monthly splits. Versus lefties, he's batting over 420, and versus righties, he's batting sub 180. Just take that into perspective. Take that into perspective. If this is the same kind of thing that we talked about last year, we always talk about it with Dylan Moore. It's the overexposure can kill you curse. You want to limit him as much as you can against righties and get, you know, Williamson, anybody who's a little bit less platoon heavy in that role when you can use a Miles Mastroboni. I think he's left-handed, if I'm not mistaken. But it's just Dylan Moore so far and currently has been looking very, very nice as they use him against those lefties, and he continues to pop off.
Yeah, he's been great. Great against lefties. We've talked a lot about that. Of, you know, another reason we really want Robles back is Dylan's been great, but we know when to use him. And when we have to use him out of his comfort zone, the numbers decrease. So hopefully we can keep him in that role as lefty eater, and he has been eating. Four home runs on the year already, should be noted. He had 10 all of 2024 and 7 in all of 2023. So his slugging is probably going to come down over the course of the year, but we will take it as we can get it. Also, just a shout out, you know, I don't think we were as explicit as we could be. He generated all four RBI in the 8-4 loss to Cincinnati. And when we were up 4-3, we thought this was going to be the Dylan Moore game, because he generated all four of our RBI in that game, going 3-3 to start the game. He was really excellent. So, yeah, well deserving of a little love, and hopefully he can keep doing what we need him to do.
Yeah, I texted you during that game. I was like, dude, are you seeing Dylan Moore do this right now? And you were just like, yep, this is the demo game. And of course, we had to give it up and let that go to waste. But it doesn't go to waste when it comes to his stats. I do want to quickly just talk about Luke Rayleigh. He's been a little bit underwhelming so far. And we're, you know, he's not a flounder. He's not underperforming to that level yet. But he's a guy who hasn't really hit his stride at the moment. And I think we can, you know, we can look at that in a couple weeks. And if he's still doing this, we might need to have a talk, because that's a guy who should be crushing right-handed pitching and has not performed in that role as of right now. And we really, if he is unable to play first base, if Rowdy is unable to get his average above 150, and if Donovan Solano is unable to do that as well, it's just, that's going to compound. That first base spot is going to be a black hole. And of all positions, you really don't want that to happen. So really looking for a Luke Rayleigh pop-off here sometime in the next couple weeks. We'll see if that happens. Do you want to jump into your first floater or founder?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to talk about a guy. It's becoming a running gag at this point, but it can't be ignored. he just continues to pop off. And that is our boy, the prodigal son, worming his way into the hearts of every Mariners fan that had gone so cold on him last year. And that is John Kerry's favorite player on the Mariners, Jorge Polanco. Had another excellent week, played all three. I guess I'm going to start with the fact that there is a, we were talking last week just about how, you know, with, you know, paternal leave and some other things happening in his life, he's not, you know, playing on a full schedule. He's a little bit reduced. The games that he's missed that we have lost, it's crazy. In the last 2 weeks, we've lost, what is it, 5 games in the last 2 weeks we've lost. 4 of those 5 games were games where Jorge Polanco was sitting out. And that means every single game that we've won, with the exception of the second Astros game, are games where he played. So when Jorge plays, we just play a whole lot better with him in. He was there for all 3 of the Rangers wins and was gone, notably, when we lost the Reds yesterday. Here's hoping that he's playing today. I don't have the open box score, but that would be a good sign. Yeah, he had a great week. He went 3-for-4 in the first game against the Rangers, 0-for-3, but with a really nice sack fly in the second game, and then 1-for-3 yesterday. His stats continue to soar. He remains in the 100th percentile in professional baseball in expected batting average. 93rd percentile in expected slugging, which is just ridiculous. And he continues to do it all over the place. He's got 14 hits so far. He's already got 3 home runs. I love this guy. This is who we wanted last year. He's currently batting .380. I'm sure that's going to come down over the course of the year, but what a refreshing breath of air, exciting and dynamic Jorge Polanco is.
Yeah, I mean, as you talk about him, he's currently up to bat, and so we'll see what he does here. I think, at least, it might be a little bit behind on my computer, but Jorge Polanco is just, he's doing so great, and he's been sitting out mainly because we don't want to play him in the field too much. It feels like that's a lot of ask for him, which is crazy because we all saw that spin move on the first baseman that he did, which, you know, if you can do that, you can probably play the field. But at the same time, it does make sense that the Mariners don't want to overutilize him too much before he's ready. So hitting in that DH role, and then when Cal needs an off day, he's kind of maybe playing in the field, maybe taking an off day himself for Jorge. And Garver's been behind the plate. So yesterday, as crazy as it was, Mitch Garver behind the plate, Cal Raleigh at DH, and our offense struggled a little bit. I wonder why. Instead of having Jorge Polanco, you got Mitch Garver in there. So
what a difference a day makes. Yeah, yeah. But I do, you know, once again, when Cal needs a break on those knees and needs to play DH, that makes a lot of sense. But I like Jorge in the DH role. Yeah, let's not wear him out. Let's let him stay really effective in a reduced role. He's still getting plenty of playing time, and we're winning games. So I love to see
it. It's one of those things that, like, don't mess with a good thing. Like we were talking about this before the pod, about if we wanted to talk about Mastro Buoni for one of our floaters and flounders. And it's like, yeah, he's hitting .304, but we don't want to, like, overexpose him. It's like Dylan Moore. Like, have him hit against lefties. Like, these guys, we're figuring out the right amount to play them, and you don't want Jorge to be playing every day if that's going to diminish his value, if he's going to not perform as well. Keep him doing what you've been doing, and then hopefully your other guys can pick up the slack that he, you know, on off days that the team has. So it's nice. Mariners just scored a run from J.P. Crawford hitting a single, so good by him. Dylan Moore scoring that run. He scored 2 of our team's runs. Our guy, our floater, coming in clutch today.
Huge. Huge. Yeah. Do you want to talk about your second floater or flounder?
Yeah. Yeah. And I should note, Dylan Moore 2-for-2 already today. So continuing his streak of being a floater, guys putting in work. I want to talk about my second floater. We've got a lot of floaters. It's been since we last talked, 3-1 week. And before that, we had won 2 of 3 as well. So 5 out of our last 7 games have been wins. And so that means we've got some floaters, and I want to talk Brian Wu. Brian Wu, over his last couple starts, obviously dominant in that Texas game, goes 7 innings, gives up 6 hits, 1 run, 7 strikeouts to 1 walk. And then the one before that, the Giants start, he goes 5 innings, gives up 4 earned runs, 6 strikeouts, 1 walk. But it's like his whip is under 1, which is what you want to see. It's kind of hovering around that 1 spot in the 1.1 is okay. Wu is like a consistently, you know, he doesn't walk guys. We know that from last year. He I think his whip last year was 0.67. If he continues on this path and continues to pitch at the volume that he's doing right now, where he's, you know, his innings pitched is actually, he's doing better than Logan Gilbert when it comes to a game by game basis. So he's just doing really good things, gets outs in a lot of different ways. And you and I were looking at his Baseball Savant like movement profile and just the way that his pitches move, where his sweeper is basically just his slider with an extra foot of movement. Like, it just, it's kind of crazy what he's able to do on the mound with the amount of spin that he gets, the amount of vertical ride that happens because of his RPM, you know, what he's able to whip onto the ball there. It's just really impressive what he's been able to do as a guy who, coming into last year, I guess, he was our number five starter. And it's like, this guy, I think this guy might be just our second best pitcher. And I think we were just unable to talk about it yet. But I think Brian Wu is probably, he's lightly riding the wave. And we were all talking about trading him last year. So I'm happy that we didn't. Happy that the Mariners didn't listen to anybody.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we know that the concern was never ability. It was availability, right?
For sure.
It was injury concerns and what his destiny was as a pitcher in the MLB. But between last year and this year, it's starting to become more apparent that he might just be the most overqualified fourth starter in professional baseball. Maybe the most overqualified third starter, depending on where you want to put him. Yeah, he's been great. He's our only pitcher without a loss this season. Obviously, that's not all on him, but some of it certainly is. Second in whip behind Logan. Logan's whip is 0.66 right now, just for the record. But
Logan's dangerous right now. Logan is dangerous right now.
Yeah, we could have Logan float every week, but we're here to talk about the other guys. His fastball has been amazing, Wu. I continue to be impressed by how dynamic he is. He's still 25 years old. I'm excited. Great start to the 2025 season, coming off a 9-3 year last year. It's been great. Six earned runs versus 19 innings pitched. I have been impressed. I'm honestly curious. Obviously, Logan is the best pitcher on this team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. If we were having a draft, if there was an expansion team in the MLB and we could only protect two pitchers, would Wu be your second guy?
Yeah. It would 100% be Gilbert. Kirby, I think he's going to ask for too much. And I think Wu is 100%, like, he's cheap for the next couple of years because he started behind everybody in terms of when he came onto the scene. And Bryce is just, the more that I watch him, the more that I think he's more of a number three starter, like a number four starter. He's not ever going to be that ace or kind of a tier two guy that we thought he was going to be last year.
Why you got to be such a hater? He had a great outing last time he played. Five innings pitched, one earned run. He was great.
I'm going to call him out until he does better the entire season. He's got to do the entire season. He's got to prove me wrong.
Unbelievable. Guy's got an ERA a full point lower than Luis Castillo. You got nothing to say about Luis.
I already talked crap about Luis Castillo, and then I said it was Dan Wilson's fault. So,
yeah, fair enough. All right, well, I am going to complete the rare week. Floaters only, floatersonly.com. Pretty amazing, but when you sweep the top team in your division, we're going to leave out Flounders for a week.
Play on farmersonly.com?
It was a joke on farmersonly.com. But I'm going to pick the fourth floater for the week. Horrible week for the haters. Awful week for the haters. It is our boy, the biggest dumper himself, Cal Raleigh Jr. He had an amazing week, highlighted by three straight home runs in the three games against Texas. He was just absolutely phenomenal. His average is still only down at 203. He's leading the team in strikeouts by a significant margin. But the dude is 97th percentile in barrel percentage, and he is slugging like a madman. So, mostly we're here to talk about the home run presence. His defense is solid as always, but I just thought he came up in a really big way in a really big week.
Yeah, that torpedo bat really helping Cal out. You can kind of see it. I think it may be a little bit of a placebo, but at the same time, you know, if it's working for Cal, he had those three home runs, and hopefully he can ride that wave of heat. I will say Julio's up with him in strikeouts, but that's expected for Julio as well. We gotta get these boys better eyes. But other than better swing decisions. Good. It's really the swing decisions.
Yeah. I guess you're right. I'm sorry. He is second in strikeouts behind Julio, but yeah, those two stand out. And you know what? And this is what I think is just so encouraging, is this was an amazing week. We're back up to basically 500 on the year, and you know, our two superstars, Julio and Randy, are batting, you know, an average between them of like 182. So the room for improvement there is absolutely massive in terms of just consistent on-base performance from your superstars. They've been doing a great job taking walks. Both of them have. JP reclaiming the walk crown last week. I did love to see that. He's up to 14 on the year. But there's so much room to grow for those two offensively and for the offense. And that's what I mean, where there are a lot of signs of life here. Rowdy Tellez has had a couple good outings. His average is still trash, but that's largely because it was really, really trash before this week. Cal's been solid. JP's been getting back in the swing of things. Dylan Moore's been really good. Robles is a stud when he plays. Polanco's been a monster. Mastroboni has been good in spot minutes. There's just been a lot of really encouraging signs. So we need the pitching to stay great, and we need our superstars to round into form. But things are starting to look up. It's starting to get a little sunny in Seattle, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, let me tell you, if Ben Williamson can find a way to stick at third base and continue to, you know, to be a 250 hitter for this team, that's awesome. He plays really, really solid third base defense. And then you've got Mastroboni, who can play second and platoon with Dylan Moore, because they've got the left-righty platoon there. And you've got just like, you're that much more solid, to where it's like, okay, your weak link is still kind of first base with Donovan Solano and Rowdy and Luke Ridley until they get it figured out. But it's like, in terms of where you need to add, if Williamson can stick, if we can platoon these guys long enough into the season that it doesn't feel like an issue, you really just need to add a first baseman. And at that point, your team's looking really good. Victor Robles will, the Mariners will say that Victor Robles is their trade deadline and acquisition, because that's what the Mariners do. But at the same time, they're going to need to add one, maybe two pieces, and I think this team's going to round into form. If Bryce Miller is your worst performing pitcher, or Luis Castillo is your worst performing pitcher, you're going to feel great. George Kirby's going to come back. He's going to be he's going to slot perfectly into that tier two spot, and he'll be great. He's not a guy who needs a ton of velocity. He's got the ability to mix it up and be kind of the Jamie Moyer-esque pitcher, mm-hmm. But still throw 96 to 99.
I think the team's in a good spot. Yeah. Neither one of us is really worried about Luis, obviously. He's the vet. He's the old head. And then Miller, Miller has been bouncing back significantly. We were worried last week, but he had a great outing. We'll see how he does next week. But his ERA is back under 5. Obviously, we want it under, 3, ideally. But he's moving in the right direction. 13 strikeouts. He needs to get that number up. But I'm still a believer. I'm a believer in Bryce.
Here's a question for you right now. If Mariners had a playoff series, who are your three pitchers? If George Kirby's healthy, who are the three pitchers going into that series?
I think, obviously, Gilbert, and then I think Wu's just looked too good in these moments not to have him in there. The Kirby-Castillo-Miller conversation is a lot more interesting for me. It's crazy. Yeah. I think probably Kirby. I just worry about Luis's control, and Bryce, to be fair, has not shown me to say I'm going to put him ahead of George Kirby. I think Kirby might have the lowest floor of those three guys, but I do think he's going to be the most consistent. I shouldn't say that. I'm sorry. He's got the lowest ceiling of those three guys, but the highest floor.
I think Luis has the lowest floor. Luis has the ability to blow up any start, I think, which is a little scary. Like he can give up a home run or two, and things can spiral when he gets into those spots, which just comes with age, comes with a guy whose velocity is declining and that kind of thing. I think this offseason will be the time that we move on from Luis Castillo, as sad as it is to say, and I don't want to talk about that at this point. We'll get into that later this year, but enjoy Luis Castillo while you have him, Mariners fans. Like, this is going to be probably the final season that we have him, and we're going to trade him for something that's going to be useful, hopefully, next offseason.
And I think that makes a lot of sense just for a roster building standpoint. But yeah, no, I love Luis, and I would love to have him in a playoff series. But I do think Kirby's pitching style too. It's like, yeah, he's probably going to have one or two earned runs, but he's definitely not going to have 6, Yeah. And as, you know, a potential third starter in a playoff series, that's fantastic. It's like, okay, hopefully our offense shows up that game. Yeah, I do like Kirby.
Yep. All right. Anything else on the Mariners? We kind of got into everything. The Mariners are currently up 3-0, bottom of the fourth, two outs, looking really solid. Bryce Miller, we've been talking crap about him, but he's given up only three hits, six strikeouts to one walk through 3 2/3, looking great.
We have not been talking shit about Bryce. You have been talking shit about Bryce. I love Bryce.
But yeah, anything else to say before we hop into some Storm draft conversation?
No, let's do it.
All right. Listeners, I don't know how much basketball you guys are watching. The NBA playoffs are about to start, but we care more about the WNBA because this Storm team had the second pick in the WNBA draft on Monday and has made some interesting choices, choices that we had not previously talked about on the pod. We talked about it between ourselves in terms of who they were going to pick up once we saw some of the discussion about the round or the second pick. But John, do you want to sum up what happened in this draft for the Storm? And maybe just general WNBA draft, if anything was shocking to you.
Sure, yeah. You know, nothing super shocking. I think I'll just say we had no second-round picks. In the third round, we secured Serena Sundell, Madison Connor, and Jordan Hobbs. Those players from Kansas State, TCU, and Michigan, respectively. All solid players. We might touch on them. But the big news was who was going to go at number two in this draft. We talked about Paige being locked in probably at number one, and that ended up being the case. I thought, you know, we might get Kiki at number two out of USC. But instead, we did something that neither one of us had considered when we had this conversation last time. And I don't blame us because I got to be honest, I don't follow international women's basketball. I don't follow international basketball. I don't watch soccer. So I'm pretty locked into the U.S. And the Storm went ahead and got a player that is very exciting. And thank goodness we didn't talk about her, because that just means we have more to talk about now. And that is Dominique Malanga, forward center out of France via Cameroon. A 6'6 kind of unicorn style prospect who was tearing it up in the French professional leagues. Very exciting. I gotta be honest, I heard her name for the first time just a couple days before draft night. So this has all been very new. I know I have my reactions. What are your reactions to the Storm skipping some more maybe high floor US prospects and going international?
Yeah, I think there's, in terms of our knowledge of this player, there's not a ton of, you know, you can pull up her EuroLeague stats and things like that. But what she is she's a 6'6 center who is just going to slot in super well behind Nyeka Nwumike and Ezi Magbegor and our other forwards. And just, and honestly, I think her potential is kind of the, like, unicorn, not as, you know, highly touted as Victor Wembanyama in that sense of, like, she wasn't the consensus overall number one pick, wasn't going to have an, or isn't necessarily going to have an immediate impact. But Dominique is just, like, she can dunk a basketball. She can basically fill the hole that kind of the spotlight was taken away from the Storm over the last couple of seasons. She can kind of come in and just be like the next Breanna Stewart after the kind of Breanna Stewart Sue Bird era. We had three previous all-stars on the team, or you know, Jewel Lloyd being a current all-star, but adding Dominique is kind of like the next phase. This is like the person that you're going to build around as your franchise cornerstone. She might not be the best player. I don't know what's going to happen over the next couple seasons for the Storm, but I think she's going to be somebody who stays with the Storm for a long time and is very, very effective at that role. So I'm excited for them.
Look at this guy forgetting that Jewel Lloyd's no longer on the
Storm. Oh, no, I knew that.
How did we get the number two pick? Yeah, this is a team that's going to have a lot of shakeup, obviously, but no, I think this is huge. I think, obviously, there have been a lot of Wembanyama comparisons just because the French national coming over and her age and her size. It's worth noting, too, for any listeners that don't watch a lot of WNBA, 6'6 is really big. If she's a true 6'6, she will be one of the 10 tallest players in the WNBA going into next year. So think of it more like a 7'1 in NBA terms. So she is very big. She's very long, athletic. She's got a clean stride. She runs the court super well. Sometimes I think with these taller players, you can really tell based on how they run, you know, how long of a career they may have in the professional leagues.
For sure.
And she looks great out there. She running is very easy for somebody that is that big. She has a lot of guard skills. She got a lot of experience internationally handling the ball, working on the perimeter, working in the pick and roll, which is another reason the Wemby, you know, comparisons have been so fraught. But I'm kind of blown away. You know, I do not know how to compare French national basketball to U.S. college women's basketball. Certainly international ball has a reputation for being tougher. And if that's true, it's a great sign because she was averaging 18.5 points per game, shooting 56% from the field, 11 rebounds, you know, a steal and a block and a half per game. So she was putting up very real, very tangible numbers for a team in Lyon and for the national team of France that won a silver medal in last year's Olympics. I think she's going to come in super ready to play. She's also the youngest player to ever be drafted in the history of the WNBA at 19.5. So, yeah, she's got a ceiling that shoots through the ceiling as far as I'm concerned. And she's so young, so much time, so much room to develop. And I think she's going to play really solid right away. I would not be surprised if she led, especially with Skylar Diggins, you know, taking on that point guard role, and Nyeka just getting older. I would not be surprised if Dominique led us in scoring next year as this, you know, new iteration of the Storm kind of pans out. But yeah, I'm really excited. And I'm just going to get off my hottest take of the draft. I was a day one page guy. We were joking about how I was kind of hoping she'd have a bad tournament so she might slip to two. My hot take is, as I've learned more about Dominique and, you know, seen some of her highlights and seen what she was doing on Lyon and just her frame and the way she moves and everything, I think she is going to be a significantly better WNBA player than Paige Beckers. I always say Buckers. Maybe not right away, maybe not right out of the gate, but in 5 years, I don't think it's going to be a question.
I think what it's going to be is the Storm are going to be able to pair. It's kind of one of those things where it's like in any situation there are for basketball, there's more point guards, more shooting guards, people that can play make out of the guard position, especially in the WNBA where it's like most of these people are 6 foot and below in terms of their guard play.
Yeah.
There's just more of them. There's not a ton of 6'6" unicorn centers that play in the WNBA. And it's like, if you can acquire one of these and you can pair them up with a girl who we can talk about her now, Serena Sundell. From Kansas City, or not Kansas City, Kansas State, who was the number 5 point guard projected in the draft, and we got her in the third round, which is awesome. She's really good out of Kansas State in terms of passing the ball and being a distributor on the floor. Somebody that's going to come in and be probably competing and probably beat out Nika Mule, who was injured for most of last season for that point guard, like secondary point guard role. I'm excited to see how this team kind of moves forward with these picks. I think Jordan Hobbs and Madison Connor are two players that will maybe have a shot at making the roster, but I think Serena Sundell is going to have a really good immediate impact as well in terms of somebody who's able to come in and compete at the WNBA level. But yeah, Dominique, super excited for her. She was last year in the for Lyon, was averaging 15.4 points over 22 games. 15.4 points, 10.3 rebounds. Doesn't necessarily have an outside shot yet, but shooting almost 30% is not bad. She's just really solid. She's a really solid player that has a unique situation and easy to build upon and improve your team around, which you don't see a lot in the WNBA. You see a lot of very, very similar prototype point guard or shooting guard play right now.
Yeah. Just last thing on Dominique and just while we were talking about game breaking stuff. I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, guards are awesome and the WNBA is full of superstar guards. But if you look at the teams that win championships and if you look at the teams that are kind of dynastic, you know, you look at Breonna Stewart, you look at Asia Wilson, you know, Candace Parker, you know, before she moved on. These are teams built around these hyper dynamic scoring bigs. These are the teams that run the WNBA. We all like watching the Indiana Fever, and Caitlin Clark is a ton of fun. You know, Steph Curry of women's basketball, but these types of players are the teams that champions are built around. Obviously, Storm with Breonna Stewart, we know exactly what that looks like. And yeah, I do think, you know, getting Paige is awesome, and she's going to be a star. There's no doubt. But I think this piece, the 6'6 scoring big piece, is so much harder to find. And to get a player like that, who's, you know, coming, you know, France is starting to look like the, you know, the best breeding ground for a lot of these future stars, or all seems to be coming out of France. There's a lot of good basketball being played in France right now. So I feel very confident. I'd feel a lot more iffy if she was coming out of Lithuania or somewhere else. But I've just got a lot of confidence in professional ball in France right now. Yeah.
France is the new Spain/Argentina, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I just feel really good about it. And then, yeah, it's a good call. I think typically second and third round picks in the WNBA are not where stars are found. You know, it's not uncommon to have, you know, pretty exclusively first round picks on the court in any WNBA game. But I think Serena is a really fantastic point. She led Division One in women's Division One in assists this season, 7.3 assists per game, led D1 in 2025. So just, you know, a great baller. She's got good size too. She's 6'2", which is big for a guard.
Yeah.
I honestly think to slot her in behind Skylar Diggins and have her learn from another pass-first big guard who's had a long and successful WNBA career, just kind of a perfect mentor-mentee situation. I'm not expecting to see loads of her this year. I would be pleasantly surprised if we did. Obviously we do need help at guard. But I think as kind of a trainee under Skylar, and then maybe kind of the replacement plan as Skylar gets older, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Storm have done something where they can implement these players, but also have a good enough foundation to where they can, I wouldn't say they're a favorite to win the WNBA chip right now or anything, but it's they're in a good spot to at least make the playoffs again. And once you make the playoffs, anything can happen from there. The other thing I will say is, you know, in terms of the number of draft picks that make the rosters for these teams, it's a lot like the NBA. It's like the NBA only has two rounds compared to the NFL's seven, because the NBA, each team has eight spots that actually play. The NFL has 53. It's like you can only get so many players in this league before there's too much. So I wouldn't expect to see, you know, all four of these picks make the roster and have significant impact, or any impact for that matter, in terms of a Jordan Hobbs, Madison Connor. But give them the opportunity. If they show out, they show out, and they can make the roster. But that's why you don't see it. There's only 14 teams, or maybe is it 12 or 14? I don't remember right now in terms of.
Yeah, I believe it's 14 in the WNBA.
There's half as many teams in the WNBA as there are in the NBA, which is why they have three rounds instead of two. But it's like once the WNBA starts to expand, talent pool gets a little thinner as you get more teams. We'll see the amount of draft rounds decrease as well, similar to the NBA, I would expect. Not anytime soon, but you know, that's how it's going to work. The WNBA is just behind.
That's funny. I just looked it up. There are 13 teams in the WNBA. It's going to expand to 15 in 2026.
Did we add one? What? Did we add one in the last year?
Not since the Aces, I don't think, but...
Oh, no, it's the Valkyries. The Valkyries just got added, right? Oh,
that's right. Good call on the Valkyries.
I was thinking it was 12, and I was like, no, there were 13 picks. But
weird, I guess it's just weird to have one more in one conference than the other. I was like, no, yeah. I know we do have more than 12, but it can't be 13, but it is. It's 13. And scheduled to go to 15, which is funny.
I guess they'll do three conferences or just like three divisions and just call it that. I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
Whatever they do, it'll be fun. All right. It's been 45 minutes, John. You want to get off any takes? I've got a couple more notes to get through before the end of the pod, just about some random Seattle sports stuff. But anything else to talk about?
No, that was perfect. You let me rant about Dominique. I'm very excited to have her in Seattle. Congrats to the Storm. It'll be fun. I'll let you take it away.
yeah, it's going to be good for the Storm. I'm excited for this season. In terms of the Seahawks return Drew Lock as a backup QB. That's going to be nice for them. Sam Darnold, if he sucks, which, you know, we all think is very, very possible. Not necessarily likely, but very, very possible. We've got Drew Lock as a backup, and we know we can go 7-9 with Drew Lock. So, in terms of college basketball, I want to touch on UW getting a lot of the UW's incoming class is looking very nice. They get Wesley Yates back from, he transferred from UW to USC, and now he's going back to UW. So good news there. He's a good player, and we've gotten a lot of players to the transfer portal. I'm not going to rattle them all off right now, but UW has been active. You guys should look it up if you haven't been following that for college basketball. The Kraken hockey season is officially over. John and I don't want to talk about them because it was such a rough season, but it was, you know, they finished with, I think, 76 points on the season and sixth or seventh in the Pacific Division. So not a great year for the Kraken. We will see how the rebuild starts. But for now, adios. The Kraken has been slain and it is resting right now. the Sounders, last time I checked, were 2-3-3. And they've got a game this Saturday, so keep an eye on that one. They're just cruising along. MLS has 1-2 games a week, so not a ton of news to talk about there. Anything to say before I sign us out, John? This is it. This is your last call.
Cal homered again, top of the fifth, 4-0 Mariners. It's looking good, baby.
Let's go. Let's go. Wow, didn't want to get off on Gonzaga Tech. I love to hear that. For John Carey, I'm Tyler Cartwright. This has been the Sound Up Seattle podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of Sound Up Seattle, please feel free to give us a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever you're listening, wherever you're watching. You can find us at Sound Up Seattle on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram. You can find us there, all lowercase, all one word. You can email us your questions, comments, or concerns at gmail or at soundupseattle@gmail.com. You can find me, Tyler, at TyCart50, everywhere that's important. And you can find John
playing Skyrim, because it's never too late to.
I should really start like documenting these. I should just be like, okay, John's playing Skyrim right now. This is like April is his Skyrim time, and then it's like Elden Ring is his June time, and then Star Wars Battlefront is his August. Like there's definitely cycles to your video game play.
I really do. I just go through. I add a new game every 4 or 5 years, and then it just goes into the cycle of games that I play. So it's very real, and I'm on Skyrim now.
Nice. All right. Well, with all that being said, let's go Storm. Storm had a great, great week. You can have the Nurse.
I'll take the Nurse. It'll be Storm's week when they go 3-1 in a week. So let's go Nurse.